criteria, like best poker face from an immigration officer, best pointed finger gesture from the baggage police, best use of an X-ray machine to catch rabbit-shaped vibrators inside a suitcase. Oh.
100% yes. I don't understand why the 17% said no. What's wrong with you? Like, you know, are these civil libertarians, you know, with this, like, I deserve my rights, my body, my right type of stuff? Mm. Like, come on, mate.
The story goes, this Richard Knight character, he was hanging out in Bangkok.
As you do.
As you do. When you fail as an actor. He didn't have a pot to piss in. Doing whatever, drugs, prostitutes, and so on, as you mm-hmm. do. Did I just say that? Hello and welcome to the Bureau Podcast. I'm Matt Cowan, the Bureau Chief and your host, coming to you from a still lockdown Ho Chi Minh City in Vietnam. Thank you for joining me. As usual, I have a massive show for you today, so stick around. Holding my hand, as usual, is the Bureau's content manager, Melanie Kasul. How are you, Mel?
Wait, let me just rub some alcohol and put some gloves on my hand. Okay,
well, so. Mine a dishpan at the moment. And holding onto the line again from his home right in the heart of Ho Chi Minh City is our co-host, Andrew Tran. How are you, Andy?
Good. I just mimicked the heart. Did you hear that?
Hi, Andy.
Don't give up your day job. On today's show, first up, we're going to revisit some of the stories coming out of Ho Chi Minh City in Vietnam this week. And then we'll get stuck into some history about Vietnam. Mm. But we plan on telling those historical stories in an interesting and funny way. So don't turn off just yet. Stop scrolling. And as a bonus, free of charge, we'll recommend some places we think you should visit once we open up for tourism again. So without any further fluff, let's get into it. Guys, there hasn't been much lighthearted news to report this week, both locally and internationally, which we'll get to in a moment. But one news report that made me laugh out loud, literally, was the announcement that Tan Son Nhat Airport, our international airport here in Ho Chi Minh City, is in contention for, wait for it, Asia's leading airport award.
Oh, wow, really? Is there such a thing?
VN Express has reported that Tan Son Nhat, Vietnam's biggest airport, is one of 12 nominees in the Asia's leading airport category.
Wait a minute. How many countries in Asia are there?
And how many airports are there? There's heaps. In the 2021 World Travel Awards to be announced in Dubai on October 6th.
Wow, breaking.
Yeah,
wow.
Now apparently Skytrax recognized Tan Son Nhat as one of the world's 10 best airports this year already.
Wow.
That one slipped under the radar.
Let me guess, only 10 entrants into this award.
What's the criteria? Like best poker face from an immigration officer. Best pointed finger gesture from the baggage police. Best use of an X-ray machine to catch rabbit-shaped vibrators inside a suitcase.
Oh, I think they're legal now. Oh, I think you can bring those through. Well, I've only heard.
How do you know? But, how do you know that?
Oh, this is a story from like ages ago when one of my girlfriends, she had a visitor. Her sister came by to visit. And then we had a friend whose birthday was coming up. And we decided that, okay, we're going to give her like a rabbit-shaped vibrator for her birthday.
And then
the gift got, you know, it got quarantined. Got confiscated at the airport. And yeah, she had to pick up her sister at the airport because of that infringement. And luckily, she was, her husband, now husband, was actually a pilot.
I heard there was a little bit of a scam going on there back in the days.
Yeah, hey? So anyway, that's a long time ago.
Yeah, but I think they get allowed through now. So okay. That's interesting.
Interesting.
Yeah. Anyway, back to where were we? The airport. For me, this announcement is like announcing that your local Vinmart is in the running for Supermarket of the Year in Asia. There are similarities between Tansen Yat and Vinmart, though. You can't get anything decent to eat there. once inside, you walk up and down and around aimlessly to find stuff, and you just can't find it.
No.
And the lines are unbearably long. And the Vinmart here in District 7 has a line out the front most days at the moment because of COVID-19.
Yeah, sure.
And probably the biggest similarity is that once you get the hell out of there, you just never, ever want to go back.
But we have no choice. But, we have no choice.
But you know you've got to go back at some stage. Yeah. So.
Well, look, no disrespect to the frontline workers in airports and grocery shops. We're just having a little bit of fun here, okay? I mean, because come on, it's just crazy times. And if you can't laugh about it, then you're just going to go crazy, really.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Just a little ribbon.
So, okay, let's flip it on its head then. What's one thing that you really like about Tansen Yat Airport, you guys?
The taxi rank at the departure area.
What?
There's a secret.
What?
am I not supposed to say that?
You go ahead with it because I don't think Andy knows about it. Okay. It's been our little secret for 10 years at least.
So basically,
not anymore.
Yeah, it's out.
When you arrive at the arrival area, so don't go out into the big lobby where all the greeters are at, where all the other local taxis are waiting. Mm. Go back up again, all right, to the departure area. Because there's a taxi rank there. So all the taxis that just let off passengers to go, at the departure area, they're waiting for a ride, before they go out.
They're not supposed to, but they do.
Yes.
They hang around. And I think we've got like a 100% strike rate.
Yeah.
Straight up into the taxi and out.
Yep.
It's brilliant.
Well, what does that mean? Do you get a cheaper rate or something? Or what?
No. They run on a meter. So, it's stock standard. There is a ticket. So basically...
Yeah, I guess we pay for that.
Yeah, we pay for the ticket. I guess the passenger before us also pays for it, but, it's a small price to pay for convenience.
Yeah, that's right. Yep, that's a cracker. What about you, Andy? Is there anything you like?
What do I like about...
the area. Yeah. Why would it win an award?
What do I like? Maybe... If I am heading out and I totally forgot to buy a gift for someone heading back to Australia, and, coffee, like Vietnam is the second highest producing coffee nation in the world. That's where I can quickly just get some quote-unquote Vietnamese coffee and then hand it over. So it's a quick, easy gift-giving.
Yeah,
I'm just thinking, legitimately, what is that that I really like about it? That's hard.
Yeah, good
it's
answer.
Really hard.
Okay, well, let's keep an eye out on how the airport goes. Come on, Tansen Yat, bring it home for us.
We're rooting for you.
Okay, so on to something quite a bit more serious now. This week in Ho Chi Minh City has been a particularly harrowing week for some. Especially the city's migrant workers as COVID-19 cases soar. As of yesterday afternoon, according to VN Express, this current wave of COVID cases has reached close to 300,000.
That's crazy.
And as of yesterday, around about this time, new daily cases were nudging 9,000. And that's on top of our extended hard social distancing restrictions we're currently struggling through at the moment. With a curfew as well. And that's been extended until September 15 when things will be reviewed again. Things aren't looking good, guys. And now with news just in via VN Express, it states that the city has decided to tighten its current restriction measures, now requiring residents to stay where they are, isolating homes from homes, streets from streets, and wards from wards.
That's crazy.
I've also just been sent photos of military vehicles pulling into position in the city centre.
Wow.
And I'm getting word that our curfew will be 24/7 from August 23. So today's August 20.
Yeah.
And I believe there will be an official announcement soon.
Wow. So that means panic buying starts now again.
Yeah.
Sounds like
Shelton, boys and girls.
Oh, wow. Is this like directive number 16? What number are we at now? Like,
yeah, I don't really know. I think I'm waiting for the official announcement to see what they say.
But it is sounding a little bit like that, right?
Yeah, well, the photos that I've seen, the, you know, what do you call them? They're not tanks. They're armored vehicles that have moved into the city
center. Like National Guards or something?
I think, Andy, you sent some photos that you saw.
Yeah. But, you know, like, I mean, going back to what Mel says, like, is it Directive 16? Is it a new number? I mean, it's comical. It almost feels like, you know, when the new Samsung S25 plus 21, like, it kind of sounds like that. It's like we've been on stuck on 16.
Yep.
And they're like, oh, what are we at? It's almost like when someone, the expression your face gives you, when someone gives you $1 million and your eyebrows lights up. And then they went, oh, sorry, we missed a zero. It's actually 10 million. You're like, I can't get any more higher than that. You know, that's how I kind of feel like right now. Like 16 plus.
Yeah. And just a tighter version.
Yep.
Now, I don't know how many migrant workers make up the population of Ho Chi Minh City at any given time. But it's a city built on migrants from the provinces.
Yep.
They come here to make a living for their families.
Lots of factories.
Yeah. And we see this each year at Tet in January or February, depending on the year, which is Lunar New Year time. And the city is deserted. Everybody packs up their things and their families and hit the roads back to their families in the provinces. It's quite a sight.
Yeah, well, you know, it's not just migrants who left, I think, or planning to leave. A lot of the unemployed foreign workers, I don't want to get into the semantics of are they migrant workers or are they called expats, you know, in this episode. That could be for another episode. But yeah, in the Filipino community, there were 271 citizens repatriated with the help of the Philippine Embassy and the consulate just last week. And this is not the first time there has been a repatriation. This is like maybe the third or fourth time it's happened since 2020. Now, I don't know how many of those are documented or undocumented workers, but yeah, the bottom line is that people have no choice, even if they don't want to go home to the Philippines, where they're going to be faced with equally stressful situations, no jobs, they have to leave.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, I wonder how many are left in the Filipino community here. Mm. Yeah.
Well, there are a few. Yeah, there are a few. Yep. I mean, most of them are teachers and they do have the proper work permits.
Engineers.
Engineers, factory workers. But for the other unskilled Filipino workers who do not have the proper working permit, I guess their days are numbered because, come on, Vietnam has to take care of their own people first, I think. And, you know, I might get bashed in the Filipino community for saying that, but it is the truth. We are just visitors in this country and our hosts have been very welcoming to us, but now it's time for Vietnam to take care of their own.
Mm. Okay. Well, sadly, however, after this week's announcement that restrictions would remain in place until September 15, thousands of these migrant workers, the Vietnamese ones we're talking about, set out for their hometowns on motorbikes with their suitcases and belongings. It created gridlock on Hanoi Highway leading out of the city. Mm-hmm. And I think for me, the images will probably be one of the more enduring ones that will remain with me once this is all done and dusted.
Yeah.
The fact that we're coming up to 2 years since the pandemic broke.
Yep.
Almost. And these people have seen that their best option for now is to flee. Mm. Many haven't had jobs for months. They're broke. They obviously don't see much hope in Ho Chi Minh City opening up soon.
Yep.
And we're not talking about people who just live on the outskirts of the city either. I saw a report about one of the workers the other day who decided he was going to ride all the way back to Nghệ An.
Wow.
I think it was up there, which is up north near Vinh. around 1,500 kilometres away, just south of Hanoi.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah, and he's not on a big motorbike either. He's just on one of those little sort of Honda Dreams or, you know, those scooters.
Yeah.
So, Andy, how have things changed, if at all, in your neighbourhood since last week? What have you observed?
Well, we had a couple of F-Zeros in and around the area, and they've now kind of cleared up. But, you know, just stepping out to quickly get some necessities, you can feel the simmering, like, panic that's happening around the area. Like, you know, at my, like, my local grocery mart, you have to line up. It's the first time I've actually seen it where I've actually lined up outside. I know it's quite normal for other places, but just looking at it from my area, just a little bit strange. People are buying up. Yeah, it's just that everyone's just, you know, there's no official word, but there is this simmering feeling like we're about to be locked down even harder. So, yeah, that's the feeling I'm getting right now, like in the city.
Wow. Well, over here where we are at District 7, it feels like there's no one here. You know, you walk you walk in between apartment blocks and it's just the dogs barking, echoing, you know. And, you know, in a little bit of, I guess I like to look at things in a very lighthearted way. Otherwise, like I said, I'm going to go crazy. But I do look forward to our local security guys, you know, lugging around this karaoke box with a loudspeaker at around 5 p.m., you know, just reminding people, hey, it's curfew time. Yep. And, you know, it's like the people, the kids, the people walking their dogs, they generally are very, you know, abiding residents and they
especially
go
especially the past week.
Yeah.
We haven't really seen anybody outside.
No, not really. You know? But, you know, lining up for groceries, everybody is patient. You know, despite the masks, you know that, you know, they're nodding their heads. They're trying to interact, you know. And look, I wouldn't say that certain, you know, people are like not as friendly as others. You know, I don't want to try to begin, you know, like boxing different nationalities to say, oh, they don't smile at you or, you know, they're not very friendly. But in general, lately, I feel that despite the differences in our nationalities, all of us living here in a bubble and the lack of human contact, I think people just want to feel that they are connected to you. So they nod their heads, they, you know, they let you pass, you know, and stuff like that. It's just really nice. I don't know. That's how I feel.
Well, let's hope the COVID caseload worm turns down soon. I just don't know how people are going to react if we get an extended lockdown again after September 15. I mean, even today with the news that we got, there was that sort of, like Andy mentioned, you know, that sort of, that feeling
looming,
of dread
feeling,
sort of, you know, looming. And I just feel like something needs to ease in terms of restrictions. I know we're going harder right now as the news comes in, but, you know, whatever that is, whatever the easing in these restrictions is or looks like, at least for the sake of everyone's morale, you know, at least so people can see there's hope for them to start making a living again. Okay, guys, a couple of weeks ago on the show, we mentioned Phu Quoc, an island west of Ho Chi Minh City in the Gulf of Thailand. It's part of Vietnam. And we mentioned it as a potential destination for a travel bubble. Now, I don't know about these travel bubbles. They keep resurfacing. no pun intended. But I don't know if one has ever actually eventuated anywhere. You know, Thailand's tried what they called a sandbox in Phuket. But that, I believe, has failed miserably. And the rape and murder of a Swiss national this month gave it publicity for all the wrong reasons.
Yikes. I didn't know that.
Yeah, that happened.
What happened?
I believe the lady was already living in Thailand, I think, or she has a connection to Thailand. And she decided to take advantage of the sandbox mm-hmm. situation in Phuket and went there and did the quarantining and whatever was required.
Yep.
And then I believe she went for a walk.
In the
evening.
Went
for a bit of a bush walk. And they found her in a waterway.
That's crazy.
Naked.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Abused and
murdered.
Yeah. So. Wow. I'm not trying to draw a correlation with travel bubble or whatever to Phuket, but I think in the case of Phuket that just sort of
bad timing
drove the nail in. Yeah. Anyway, it appears that the Vietnamese government isn't giving up on the hope that some kind of travel will resume to Phuket as early as this October.
But why Phuket specifically? Why not Hoi An or Da Nang or I don't know, Nha Trang. Yeah, Vung Tau. Why Phuket?
Well, it's an island.
Ah.
It's an island for a start, and it's got an international airport, and it already had all those connections, international flight. You could, before COVID-19, you could fly in directly from Italy.
Oh, wow.
You know, I think there was a flight from London, definitely from Russia.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, various parts around Korea,
Taiwan,
you know, so all the infrastructure's in. There are a ton of hotels and resorts.
Oh, okay.
So the island can accommodate people. I don't know about the medical facilities, though. Mm. I don't know what that's like. And the initial plan that was reported back in July stated that they wanted to trial a 6-month vaccine passport program on the island.
Okay.
And that they hoped to receive 40,000 foreign tourists during the period. They also plan to have 70% of the island's population vaccinated by next month.
Mm.
So that's, September? And the population on Phuket apparently is about 180,000 people. So I think they could knock that over. I think they can vaccinate those guys, which begs the question, guys, given the events of this week in Ho Chi Minh City and what we've just been talking about with the news that's come in, do you see it happening?
Look. It could happen. I mean, if certain organizations really put their mind into doing it and ticking all the boxes, it will happen. But the question is, will people go? Because I won't.
Yeah, that's a good question, because like 100% flights will be way more expensive than what it once was. So you're automatically going to strike out quite a lot of people that can afford flights in the first place.
Yeah.
And also the safety, right?
Mm-hmm.
What about the safety? Like, people can forge documents. I mean, we know that already. Like, you know, people forging documents to go in between different districts right now. Like, you know, you hear that in the news. So how are they going to manage it? But, oh, man, I think there's bigger things, right, that you see. Like, you mentioned Phuket. You also mentioned, Thailand's sandbox. And I think something that just happened recently that got announced is the green lanes between Singapore and Germany.
I hadn't heard of that.
So it only just got announced like a couple of days ago, but just under like there's going to be some travel lanes between the two countries, and it's only for like fully vaccinated travelers.
Right.
So I don't know how that's going to happen, but I think everyone's trying to push. A lot of people in Southeast Asia is trying to push. So, we'll have to see.
Yeah, I think everyone's pretty keen to get it back for sure, which brings us to vaccine passports. I get the feeling we'll see something like this in Ho Chi Minh City bars and restaurants, gyms, etc., wherever people congregate. Events,
schools,
Andy,
you
your events, maybe schools,
possibly.
I don't know. No idea about the schools. And, yeah, that probably will depend on how vaccinations go and where we're at. But firstly, what do you think about that? And what do you think these passports will look like? And how will it be policed?
Well, that's the thing. Are these passports, these vaccination passports, they're only applicable, like the rules and regulations in Ho Chi Minh? Or is it going to be the same policy in Hanoi?
Right.
And more importantly, is it going to be the same policy in Asia throughout the world? You know, because like, my mom got vaccinated in the Philippines with a brand that is not like recognized or certified in the U.S.
Right.
So if she wanted to visit my sister and her family in the U.S., she might not be able to go, because on her vaccination passport, the brand that she used is not accepted in the U.S. So I think that's a bigger picture. I'm thinking about that bigger picture.
Yep.
How about you, Andy?
Yeah. Like same thing with you as well. Like how, you know, one country will accept, you know, only a certain type of vaccines applicable to others. Yeah, I don't know. And then also booster shot. What about that? Mm. Like how do you determine those other booster shots? Is it like a passport where, you know, every time you get a booster shot, you get like a special kind of virtual stamp on your vaccine passport that enables you? So, yeah, a lot of questions they need to nut out.
And, you know, I wanted to share an experience I had early this week. So I went to the clinic to get a skin issue check. I'm okay, by the way, if you're wondering what that skin issue was. But I was waiting at the triage tent outside the clinic, and I was told that in order for me to see the GP, the general, what's a GP called? General practitioner, right?
Doctor.
Yeah, yep. Just the doctor who was on call. In order for me to see him, I had to take a rapid COVID test, and I had to pay for it. So they made me take the test. I paid for it. I had to wait for
how much was that?
About 350,000 Vietnam dong. So that was on top of what I paid to see the doctor and the medicine that he recommended for my skin issue. So it got me thinking, you know, these so-called vaccine passports, they might be useless anyway, because look at that. I told the clinic people that, hey, I already got my vaccine. This is my certificate from the vaccine provider. And so they said, no, that means nothing. You know, you still have to get the rapid COVID test in order to see the doctor. So it's not just in clinics. How about the other basic services, you know? Private services that might refuse to let people enter their premises.
And do they want to refuse people?
I know.
You know, like, so, especially after the lockdowns and how desperate business will be.
Mm. So yeah, that's another angle to this ever-growing, you know, branch of issues.
Mm. Well, last week I ran a small online poll asking Bureau followers if they would be okay if vaccine passports were introduced in Vietnam for air travel, to eat at restaurants, drink at bars and attend events. 83% said yes.
All right.
17% said no. There weren't any reasons given, but it's quite a majority there.
Ah, what would you have voted for, Andy?
100% yes. I don't understand where the 17% said no. What's wrong with you? Like, you know, are these civil libertarians, you know, with this like I deserve my rights, my body, my right type of stuff? Mm. Like, come on, mate. Get your act together. Thought, you know, we're a community. We have individual traits, but we're a community at the end of the day. We've got to do what's best for the community. So get vax, you know, show the vax. You know, like they say, man. You know, if you want to be the best, you got to do the test, man. So get yourself tested, vaxxed, and documented, and you'll be sweet.
Ho Chi Minh City, or rather Saigon, was back in the international news this past week after the withdrawal of the U.S. military from Kabul in Afghanistan. Very quickly, the imagery of civilians trying to flee was compared to the U.S. withdrawal of Vietnam the day before the fall of Saigon on April 30, 1975.
That's right.
Of course, the image we're all picturing at the moment is probably that iconic one taken by Dutch photographer Hubert van Es. He took a photo of South Vietnamese civilians and CIA staff scrambling to board a waiting U.S. helicopter resting on top of the elevator shaft above the then offices of the CIA at what is now 22 Lee Tu Jom Street.
Yeah, and was that like being billed as like the last flight out of Saigon, something like that, right? Or it just created this image that was like the last flight out?
I think so. Mm-hmm. I don't think it actually was, because I think the last ones actually did leave from the U.S. embassy, I think.
Hey, Matt, you did a post, right, a little while ago, like featuring that same spot where the helicopter was.
Yeah, that's right.
I remember, did you do a video on that? Yeah.
Yeah, I did a short video. Yeah, it's on thebureauasia.com. And I always wanted to go up there and I used to look at it because you can actually see the spot.
Mm-hmm.
The building's still there. The actual elevator shaft that the chopper sort of didn't really land on it, but it was resting on it, hovering above it. Where the, and then the people ran up the ladder to get on board there. It's all still there, mm-hmm. and the elevator's still working.
There's still people living there too.
Yeah, there are people living there. There are offices there. So it's all there, and it was sort of this time last year, I think, we found out that there was a cafe that opened
up
there. It's not there anymore.
It closed.
But it was very, you know, it was one of those places. It was it's a very iconic. Well, that photo is very iconic, and it was it's a great place to see and just get a feel for it. It caught my eye, that post that you mentioned, Andy, because this week it started getting a whole bunch more hits.
Mm.
So obviously people were online
comparing,
you know, looking at this situation in Kabul.
Yeah.
And it's good to know that we're getting discovered as well.
Unfortunately, in a very bad situation.
Yeah, true. Yeah. True, yeah. But still, you know, it's good to see.
We'll add it in the for anyone who's listening, like, we should add that in the show notes below. Like, definitely check out that post, Matt.
Yeah, I will, for
really,
sure.
Really, really interesting.
Yeah. It's also a place, it's a very interesting place because even last year when I posted that online, I was getting comments. People were saying, oh, that's the US embassy.
Mm.
That's the final, you know, lifting off of the chopper, the last flight out. And there were even people sort of trying to argue the point. And I'm like, it's not it.
Yeah.
It was the old CIA building. The US embassy is actually a few blocks further over on Lee's One Street.
Mm-hmm.
And there are, of course, choppers going in and out all day on April 29 and April 30, I believe, on the day. Okay, so I thought it would be a good idea for each of us to recommend one historic place or site in Ho Chi Minh City that's kind of off the YouTube trail.
That's difficult because I'm always on YouTube, so all my ideas are from there.
Yeah, so that's why we're doing this, so we can provide people with something a little bit different. So hopefully when this place opens up again to travel, people will go to our post and see these things that we suggest. Now, it doesn't have to be amazing to look at.
Yep.
And it can.
Oh, I have the perfect example for that.
And it can be a site. Stop looking at me. Where something happened. So there doesn't necessarily have to be a building there or anything remaining that suggests something happened there. So who wants to go first?
Ladies first.
Righto, Mel.
Lady first. Okay. So, look, I personally would like to visit places or recommend people who are, you know, into novels, short stories, movies about Vietnam. Okay. Not necessarily just in Ho Chi Minh City, but Vietnam in general. So, for example, books and movies like The Quiet American, The Scent of Green Papaya, or even more recently, the King Kong movie, which was shot on location here in Vietnam as one of the locations. So those are the kinds of places that I would recommend.
Yeah, well, you're a huge movie buff as well, so that makes sense.
Yep. So like a year ago, we finally got to go to Sa Dec, which is one of the locations mentioned in the autobiographical book and eventually a movie called The Lover by Margaret Duras. So obviously I can see your face. It's like, eye roll. It's a very girly, it's a very girly novel. It's a very girly story.
Yeah, I couldn't get through the novel or the movie, I'm afraid.
So even if there was soft porn in it. So anyway, Jane March, I think that was the name of the actress. So we did a few videos about the Lover's House in Sa Dec, you know, and other places of interest.
Yeah, we actually went to the house. Mm-hmm.
Where the Chinaman lived. That was the character, right? The Chinaman.
Yeah, that's right.
So
it's still standing.
It was kind of underwhelming, actually.
Yes.
Yeah, but
I thought it was suitable because the book and the movie,
underwhelming. Get
so,
over it.
So the Lover's House was the icing on the cake. It is a in a really nice location.
Yes, it's near the market, near the river,
and I guess you do get a good sense of what was happening at the time. And
to find out Matt's full
I'm struggling
reaction.
For words here, to be honest.
To find out Matt's full reaction to The Lover's House, we do have a YouTube video about that. But because, you know, it was such an interesting place, we also went around.
And Sardek is a must visit.
Yeah,
I thoroughly enjoyed that place.
That's my recommendation for when travel comes back. Sardek, nice, give it a try.
Nice one. Mm-hmm. Thanks, Mel. Andy?
You know, it's not as historic as what Mel said. I think I'm like, damn, I gotta find better places to go.
It's okay. As long as there are better drinks.
You live in a historic area anyway, but yeah.
Yeah, I do live in a historic area, but there's nothing as cool as what you just said. It's like the only cool thing I find is like, oh, there's a lot of hens and they're really, really tiny. So it gives you that feel of, you know, being local, I guess, in a non-PC type of way or cultured. I don't know if I'm going to get crucified saying that. Anyway, I'll move on because I'm digressing and I don't want to get totally demolished. But one place that I probably recommend, which adds that kind of Aussie feel, is the Caravel Hotel.
Ah, yes, yes.
Because the Caravel Hotel, like, it was open back, like, I think 1959. It used to be the embassy for the Australian embassy and New Zealand embassy.
Right, that's
so
right.
Were, like, Australian troops. Yep. Yeah, depicted in there. And, you know, I think it had, like, a really cool, like, a famous Vietnamese architect
I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah, it's like, instead of it's like modern designs, and there was like a Vietnamese. Hey, you actually, on a side note, do you know what I just found out? For anyone who's like interested in like China, for instance,
okay,
the Forbidden City, one of the major architects was actually Vietnamese.
Oh, wow.
Think about that. Like Vietnam. Yeah. So one of the major architects was a Vietnamese architect. He was a eunuch that came from North Vietnam.
Interesting.
And did that. But anyway. That would be a reason why you would want to go to Auburn City. But if we're in Saigon, Caravel Hotel is really, really cool. So if you're ever in, you know, when things open up again, Caravel Hotel, super duper cool, has an Aussie vibe to it. It's also downtown. So you can easily, if you're on a romantic date, kind of walk up and down.
Are you doing the marketing?
No, I think he's he's doing recce for where he's going to take his next
look,
date to.
Well, there's a great bar on the rooftop there. So it's on the rooftop of the original
building.
Mm. And it's
ninth floor, I think.
It's got a roof, but it's kind of more open air, and you look all the way down to Notre Dame Cathedral, and it's where the war correspondents used to go.
Mm.
They used to go there for a drink. I think it was part of their 5 o'clock follies.
Yep.
And across, diagonally across from the building, of course, you've got the Opera House downstairs in front of the Caravel. Mm-hmm. But diagonally across, the old Eden building used to be there, of course.
And where the shopping mall is now.
Yeah, there's a shopping mall there and it's turning into
Is it called Vincom?
Yeah, I think it's owned by them, but it's also now turning into the Oriental
Hotel.
Is that what it's called?
Five-star.
Big five-star hotel. So they've been doing that up. And the old Eden building, I believe, was also a place where
the journos
used to hang out and share stories.
Yeah.
Of course, opposite is the Continental.
Yeah, another historical hotel. Yep. Sure. Yep.
Yeah, no, it's a good choice, Andy, because when was it, Mel? About 6 months ago, we decided we were going to try and do a piece on sort of the 5 o'clock follies, which was
we went to
the happy hours.
Yeah, we went to the Majestic Hotel, the Rex Hotel, the Continental Hotel.
Yep.
So all these old hotels that where the journalists sit and hang around. Yep.
I think we even had sex on the beach at the Rex. The Rex has a lot of those old I'm talking about cocktails, of course. And it's a great – that bar up there is huge.
Yeah.
And it gives you a great view down Windway Street, the walking street.
Yeah.
But I think from memory, what we found out, I think we went to four or five places over a period of a few Sundays.
Yep. Old hotels.
Yep. The winner for me was the Continental.
Yes.
They had a happy hour that was about half the price of everybody else.
And you can just people watch.
People watch. You can get a cocktail for about $105, $100,000 or something.
And towards late in the afternoon, like maybe 4 o'clock, the sun is like hidden. Well, obviously it's not a direct sun. And then you can just relax there, people watch and just, you know.
That was winter too. Well, our cooler month, so it was beautiful. All right, I better give you mine. I'm going for something a little off-piste.
Okay.
I'm suggesting a church, which, Mel, your eyes just opened wide up. And it's not Notre Dame, which I believe is the oldest church in Ho Chi Minh City.
Okay.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Mm-hmm. The one I'm talking about is the Tu Diem Parish Church.
Okay,
and
small.
The Lovers of the Holy Cross Convent.
Ooh. Lovers of the Holy Cross.
I should have queued that one up. It's been there since the 1820s or 1830s, and it's located across the Saigon River.
Okay.
It's almost directly opposite the end of the Windway Walking Street.
Yeah.
So if you go down to the very end, you'll get to Tonduktang Street, which runs along the river. Yeah,
where the ferry boats are.
Yeah, where you get the ferry to Vung Tau.
Okay. Yep.
And the local ferry. And if you look across the river, you'll see a church and the convent's there as well. These days it's probably easier to see at night because it's lit up like a club.
the nuns are clubbing.
They're onto something, I think, because they've got like pink and blue neon lights that go around the cross and around the eaves and stuff like that. So it looks... Yeah, it looks like a club, actually. So I don't know what they're up to, but it looks really cool.
Yeah.
And now, guys, I don't know if you – well, Mel does, but I don't know about you, Andy, but I'm an ex-dairy farmer.
That's why your family name
– I grew up on a dairy farm.
That's
in Australia.
Why your family name is Cow One.
I need to look into that history on my name, but I wasn't really officially a farmer, but my father was a dairy farmer. And 5 years ago or so, I did a magazine piece on this particular church and the Tu Diem Church. And that was because at the time it was earmarked for relocation.
Yeah.
It's, no one knew what was going to happen to it.
But it's still there. It survived.
Yeah, they've managed to survive, and I've read recently that they're going to stay there despite all the development. And when I was there, I was snooping around before the nuns knew I was there, and I came across a small dairy.
Wow.
So there's actually a small dairy to the side of the church.
How many cows did they have?
I don't know. They've just got a small... number there in the shed, and they milk them every day. And I guess it's for the nuns and the congregation. And well, I couldn't believe it. So
they're very self-sufficient, these nuns.
You can't see it if you don't go there. You've really got to go there and see it.
Yeah.
I hope they're still there.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. I haven't been there for a few years. But, you know, it's probably the world's most urban dairy farm. Now, that's an award I'd be proud of.
Yeah.
Wow. Sorry, Tan Son Nhat Airport. We have a dairy run by nuns.
In a hidden club.
In the with a club in the center of Ho Chi Minh City. Now, that's way more worth a travel gong.
That's cool. I want to go.
Yeah.
Our final story today takes us back to Phu Quoc and a pirate story of sorts. Have you ever heard of Captain Kid Mihares?
Oh, is he like a rapper?
That was my attempt at a pirate accent. Captain Kid was a Scottish sea captain.
Ah.
Sorry, Mel, not as romantic as Jack Sparrow. He was born in 1955 and he spent the second half
Wait, this guy's real?
Yeah, well, he was.
Okay.
He was born in 1655. and he spent the second half of the 17th century sailing the deep blue yonder of the Caribbean.
Ah.
And yes, he became a pirate, me hearties.
Hey, did you know that this year's International Talk Like a Pirate Day is on September 19th? Hey.
That wasn't an ad either. oh, God. I don't know if I can go through with the rest of this. I believe Captain Kidd spent much of his early life sailing out of New York.
Mm. So he is a rapper. He's from the hood. He's from the New York projects or something.
East Coast.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he ended up being – yeah, he's Scottish and I'm losing track here. He ended up in New York and this was after the English took over, I believe. Mm. The Dutch were there at one stage. Anyway, by 1689, Captain Kidd had become captain of his own ship, the Blessed William.
Blessed William.
Which by some accounts became his by way of a mutiny.
And probably
through coercion and threatening sailors with his cutlass and prodding them out onto the plank. not a cutlet, no. one of those big swords things that they use. Anyway, you know, the usual stuff. I think he got himself the Blessed William through these ways, these piratey kind of ways. Anyway, to cut a long story short, Captain Kidd built a reputation as a fierce pirate operating along the east coast of America and in the Caribbean.
Okay.
Naturally, he was stealing gold and money and whatever else was valuable back then. Spices, bananas, coconuts, I don't know. And he was also a pirate hunter.
A pirate hunter.
Yep.
So he was like a double agent.
He kind of was, yeah.
He was a pirate, but also hunted pirates.
He was he was commissioned as a bounty hunter.
A privateer, whatever it was.
And so the wealthy commissioned him to do their dirty work. So you know, obviously they were trading, and their boats were coming back and forth, but getting raided by these pesky pirates. Yeah, knocking off all their goods and money on the high seas and drinking rum and making off with their women and all this stuff.
Drink rum and Coca-Cola.
Anyway, Captain Kidd, he got wind of this.
Okay. Like downwind or?
That he got wind. Sorry, not of. Oh, my God, I'm losing it. He got wind that he was wanted by the English for doing piratey things.
So he also got double crossed.
And talking funny like you, so be careful. And he started squirreling away his treasure.
Okay.
Burying it on deserted islands and so forth.
Inside oysters.
Yeah, possibly.
Inside whales.
Yeah, and eventually the English got him.
Okay.
And they shipped him off back to England where they hanged him in 1701 for murder.
Okay.
Now, what's this got to do with Vietnam, you're probably thinking right now?
There's a movie about him and it's going to be shot in Vietnam.
Oh, that'd be cool, but no.
What?
Now, fast forward to the early 1980s and there was this failed British actor by the name of Richard Knight.
Oh, okay.
I think we all have a bit of failed actor in us, And do you want to talk about how you weren't accepted into acting? Anyway, the story goes, this Richard Knight character, he was hanging out in Bangkok.
As you do.
As you do when you fail as an actor. He didn't have a pot to piss in, doing whatever, drugs, prostitutes and so on, as you do. Did I just say that?
Okay.
Anyway, as you do in these kinds of situations, when you're down on your luck, you come up with harebrained ideas and you also gravitate towards others.
With the same idea.
Possibly. Or, they're down on their luck. They're open to anything.
Is that why we're together?
And they're often in a similar boat. We've got to get this story done. Anyway, he befriended a young teenage American called Cork Graham.
These are really great hip-hop names.
I know.
You know?
And he happened to be in Bangkok as well. Mm. Now, I don't know his full story, but Knight convinced Graham, probably over a joint and a few rums and whatever else, lap dancers, that he convinced this guy that he was in possession of a 300-year-old map.
Okay.
And that map was made by Captain Kidd.
Okay.
Okay, and on that map, it had an X on the spot.
Okay.
That marked.
This is getting close to the
where
end.
Where Captain Kidd, this pirate, had buried some of his treasure before he was sent back to London and strung up.
Yeah.
Now, that X on the map was located on the small island of Hon Che Lon of Fukuok.
No way.
In fact, it's a small island off Fukuok.
What?
And it's part of this. And it's part of this small archipelago of islands between mainland Vietnam, Cambodia, and Fukuok.
Wow.
And get this, the islands are known in Vietnam and it translates into Vietnamese as pirate islands.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Can you take like a short boat ride?
Well,
from
these
Fukuok
days
to
you
go
can.
There?
These days you can take a ferry from Hat Tin down south, right down south near the Cambodian border. To Fukuok, but you can now visit these at least one of these islands.
Wow.
They used to be off limit to tourists and were definitely off limit to limits to foreigners.
Mm-hmm. Is there a military
there still
base?
Some, yeah, well, there's naval outposts
all
there.
All right, that makes sense.
But I believe you can still – I'm not sure if you can get to this particular island where Captain Kidd apparently buried his treasure.
Army hardies!
So get this – I'll wrap this story up soon, but these jokers, these guys thought it would be a good idea to hire a speedboat from Pattaya in Thailand.
In the 80s.
Yeah, this was about 1983.
Okay.
And as the crow flies, it's about 700 or 800 kilometres northwest of Fukuok.
Okay.
It's actually, Pattaya's not that far from here, really. So off they went. They got themselves a speedboat and the story goes they got to the island, started digging.
Okay.
Believe it or not.
Without a permit.
This was back in 1983. So Vietnam was still closed essentially.
Sure.
As is still the case today, Vietnam's outer islands, so I mentioned just before that they had naval installations.
Yes.
So they were caught red-handed. Before long, someone
Navy
spotted
officers,
them. Yeah, someone spotted them.
Police.
Yeah. And they ended up in the prison on Fukuok, which, you know, is one of the most notorious prisons in Vietnam.
For how long?
About 14 months.
Oh, wow.
Now, they were stuck there for that long. One, because they weren't allowed out without paying a fee.
Yep.
But two, no one knew they were missing. No one knew where they were, you know.
They were just in Bangkok, partying.
Just hanging around Bangkok and they said, what the hell, let's go and dig up some treasure. Anyway, eventually in due course, they got out. Our buccaneer, Mr. Knight, he claimed to have found the loot.
Wow.
He then confessed and said he reckoned he'd been there on a previous trip, but he didn't. He'd found so much that he needed to go back and get a bigger boat.
Oh, wow.
So he left it there. But then when he came back,
it's gone.
He'd forgotten where it was.
Oh, no.
I think he'd had too much weed in the
meantime.
Is this
a real story?
This is a real story. And there's been a book written about it. I think there's some TV shows. There's something on YouTube. I've seen a couple of little things on YouTube.
But not a full-blown movie.
Not as far as I know.
Wow, this is like Weekend at Bernie's.
Yeah, but what a story. Yeah. Eh? What a story. And another reason to visit Fukuok with your vaccination passport.
Yeah, looking forward to that.
Do some gold digging on Fukuok, Mel. Hey?
Ooh, yeah.
Get the metal detectors.
Well, that's all we have for you today, me hearties. I trust you've enjoyed this episode. I want to thank my two partners in crime, Melanie Kasul. Thanks, Mel.
Hey, no problem, matey.
You can search for Mel on social media on Instagram at Melanie Kasul, including on all the Bureau Asia channels. No metal detector or shovel required.
Or rabbit-shaped.
And a big thank you to Andy. You can
what up?
You can follow him
that's
on
all I can do.
Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Just search for at Andrew Chan Digital, and he'll appear. Unlike Captain Kidd's treasure, and he's very easy to find at the moment. He's going to be locked up for another 2 or 3 weeks in his apartment. Lastly, thank you for listening. Be sure to support us with a share. Don't bury us away in your browsers. We're treasure that's worth being discovered and shared. And you can do that via thebureauasia.com and on social media. We're at Mel.
At The Bureau Asia.